Come with me and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look and you'll see into your imagination.
Welcome. I'm Solazar, and this is My Metaphysical Musings. Now, before we get into the show, let me tell you a little bit about me. I'm a speaker, a performer, a reader, a healer, a radio host, and an author. I've been part of the metaphysical community all my life, and along the way, I've completed a series of formal studies, as well as all the informal interactions and connections we develop. Now, this show will share a variety of metaphysical subjects. And I like to start each show with a reading from Day by Day with James Allen. Now, James Allen wrote his phenomenal essay, As a Man Thinketh, in 1903. And he took the title from chapter 23, verse 7 of Proverbs, which says, As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. You see, James Allen wanted to reinforce for all of us that we got to this present reality where we are through our past thoughts, actions, beliefs, and intentions. But they don't predict our future. Our future is a direct result of our present thoughts, actions, beliefs, and intentions. And in Day by Day with James Allen, his words have been broken up into a little segment for each day of the month. And today, for the 30th day of the month, James Allen tells us the power of faith. By the power of faith, every enduring work is accomplished. Faith in the supreme, faith in the overruling law, faith in your work and in your power to accomplish that work. Here is the rock upon which you must build if you would achieve, if you would stand and not fall. The power of faith. Do you have the faith and belief in yourself and in what you do to make the choices to keep yourself moving forward when all else around you appears to be coming apart? Those are the questions for you to answer for yourself. Now, I've mentioned in every show that there are three things I do every day. One is I do a forgiveness prayer. Even before I get out of bed, I do a forgiveness prayer. I forgive those around me. I forgive myself for what I've done to others, and I forgive myself for what I've done to myself. And we will close today's show with that prayer. The second thing I do is I give gratitude. I simply say, thank you for everything. I have no complaints whatsoever. And I repeat that. Thank you for everything. I have no complaints whatsoever. The idea is to say, I am grateful for what is currently present in my life. I am not expressing a lack or a need or a want. I am grateful for what is there. Thank you for everything. I have no complaints whatsoever. And the third thing I do is to read from the Daily Word. And the Daily Word puts out these wonderful little booklets that I receive, and I also receive their emails. And today, for Sunday, July 30th, they say, I am divinely inspired to create and live a full, abundant life. I am divinely inspired to create and live a full, abundant life. How much better can that be than with the premise of the power of faith? By the power of faith, every enduring work is accomplished. Faith in the supreme. Faith in the overruling law. Faith in your work and in your power to accomplish that work. Here is the rock upon which you must build if you would achieve, if you would stand and not fail. Because you are divinely inspired to create and live a full, abundant life. What a wonderful start to today's show. Now, this is the end of the first month of Metaphysical Musings, if you can call it a month, since I started on July 9th. Now, where I have tried to go with this and where I continue to expect to go is through the journey of what I've learned along the way and what's worked for me and what information was important for me to understand what I needed to do to get past those blocks that might be keeping me from achieving my full potential. And I spent the first three shows talking about forgiveness and the wounding of our inner child, which is so critically important. Now, the reason I chose to start with those targets is really a result of my own personal journey since 2012. I mean, starting in 2012, my work life was challenged, followed by my home life. I was a contractor providing support to a federal agency. And upon my retirement from the U.S. Marine Corps in 1994, I had been asked specifically to remain and support this agency. At that time, the director had said, "We'll always have a spot for you," which naturally I took in the context of that director saying it to me, not in terms of reality. During my time there, I'd met a woman who was a contractor for another company, and we got married. I was deeply in love. Later, she was recruited and became a government employee for the agency that I supported. So every year we had to file specific paperwork to show the absence of a conflict of interest. I was a contractor, she was a government employee. And the government contracting officer who managed the contract was aware of our marriage and our full compliance with the requirements of law regarding our potential conflict of interest. But in 2012, the new director of the government agency determined that my wife and I were in a potential conflict of interest situation. Now, keep in mind, at that point in time, we'd been married 11 years. We had gotten married. Everybody in the organization knew when we got married. They knew we were married when they offered her the government position and she took it. All of that was known. And the contracting officer for the contract I was on that was supporting the agency also knew of our marriage and recognized that we were in full compliance of the law. But in 2012, this new director determined that she and I were in a potential conflict of interest situation. So she instituted a procedure where any communication from the government employees in my wife's division to any employee in the company that employed me had to be sent through a third party. And in addition, any communication from any employee of the company that employed me to any government employee in my wife's division had to be sent through a third party. Now, failure to comply would result in a letter of reprimand for the government employee and a referral for appropriate action to the company for the contract employee. So this essentially was causing all necessary business communication to have to be sent to a third party. Now, I fought back, and it took most of the year. I had been trained during my time in the Marine Corps as a contracting officer. I had attended the training put out by the Defense Supply Services in the Pentagon. And as a matter of fact, had been at the top of my class at that time. Now, I never operated as a contracting officer, but I managed quite a few contracts as a technical advisor on site. In essence, that really meant the contract was there to support me, and I had to provide input and reports to the contracting officer. So as I said, I fought back. Now, it took most of the year. I fought back through the company lawyer for the company that employed me. Keep in mind, the company lawyer represents the company, not me. But I needed to get as big a gun as I could to try to get engaged because I was too small to make the shifts happen. Everyone was going along with this issue of the third-party email process as if it was appropriate and as if it was proper. I was also objecting to the fact that there was an implied threat to the government employees of a reprimand. It wasn't really implied, it was stated, but there was an implied threat to the employees of the company that employed me. The lawyers finally came back and confirmed that I was correct and the agency had acted inappropriately, and they would address it through the supervisor who was responsible for coordinating with the government agency. Now, that occurred in November of 2012. So in February of 2012, we started this email thing. In November of 2012, the lawyer came back and said, "No, you were right. We've looked into it." In February 2013, I was notified by the company that the government agency had indicated they did not have work for me when the new contract would start. And the new contract would begin May 1st of 2013. So in November, The government lawyer, the company lawyer came back and said I was right. The agency had operated incorrectly. They would address it to the agency. The result of that was the agency notified the company that they no longer had work for me, and that when the new contract started, I shouldn't be a part of it. So April 30th, 2013 was my last day of employment. Now, for weeks after being let go, I was approached by another contract firm to return to that same agency and do an analysis of a redesign initiative. And I returned for a 90-day contract, which lasted until September 30th of 2013. We went through 2011. We went through that whole year of this third-party issue with the emails. 2013, the agency said to my company, we no longer have work for him. They let me go, and then within 5 weeks, I was brought back on a 90-day contract to do some special work. After that, I was done, though, once that was 90 days was done. Although there was some talk about bringing me back for more work, that didn't happen, and I didn't expect it to happen. Now, while that had been going on for years, my wife had constantly complained that she was worried about being financially liable for my sole proprietor business. And we consistently paid anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000 extra taxes each year we filed jointly. She had asked if we could divorce so we could file individually. So in December 2013, our divorce was final. I had processed the paperwork, walked her through it. What I didn't know is that this divorce was really an excuse for her to start an affair. So in 2014 now, so in 2013, we're now divorced. So I've been laid off. I'm out of work. I don't really have prospects at that time. We get divorced, and I think it will bring us together because it's something she wants. And what I don't realize is it's something she wants so we can be further apart. In 2014, I was desperate to generate revenue. I marketed my speaking and performing, went out, was constantly reaching out, getting executive lists to use to market to. I contracted with a new radio network for our radio show to expand our audience. And then I was presented an opportunity to purchase a radio station that had gone from a regular station to an internet-only station. I thought, well, he's already got revenue coming in. This would be a good revenue source. So this is 2014. So I purchased the station. I attempted to turn it around. And during 2014, also, my wife seemed to grow more distant. And I know we're divorced, but we were still living together. I just couldn't call her partner or friend. In addition, I didn't know she was in another relationship. I didn't know she was seeking comfort elsewhere, so to speak. I just kept thinking she was withdrawing because she didn't respect that I had not gained income. And I was spending all my personal savings to try to generate marketing or to get out and do things or to get contracted into that other radio network or even actually to buy this radio station. So when I would ask my wife if there was any problems between us, she always denied it. And I just tried to love her more. Now in 2015, I began to turn the radio station around. It was on the verge of almost covering costs, but I just could not push it over the top. Then in June of 2015, I attended a summer solstice celebration, and each participant was asked to name what they were grateful for in their life. And the only thing I mentioned was my wife. I was grateful for her being in my life. I felt very blessed. I felt that I had never loved anyone as much as I loved her. And it was very important to me that she was in my life. Now, when it was her turn, she was grateful for many, many things, but none of them included me. I asked her about that later. I still believe that there was something between us, and I must be disappointing her. I didn't know that what was between us was someone else. Naturally, she lied to me once again that I should know she was grateful for me. So this is now June of 2015. We've gone from the whole year of the email stuff in 2012. In 2013, I'm informed there's no more work for me and I'm let go, although I'm brought back within 5 weeks for a special 90-day assignment, and then that's done. And then no more work for me. And now I'm desperately trying to drive in revenue. And 2014 was a lost year. It was a year of excessive spending in marketing, into outreach, in attempts to generate revenue, including buying the radio station, and nothing coming back. Now, in July 2015, I knew I couldn't continue operating the radio station, the suite of offices I was leasing. The overhead was too much. I wasn't pushing over that point, and I just could not continue to pay the overhead. I needed to get more revenue. So I spoke to my wife to see if she would object if I set up the radio studio at home. And she agreed it was a good idea. So I began planning the closing down of the physical studio and the setup in the remote studio at my home. So I provided training to all the radio hosts on how they would do their shows. There was a new way. They would do them remotely since they weren't physically coming into a studio. And their remote would tie into my home studio at home, and I would engineer from there. Now, I was hoping to not have to engineer their shows, but as it turned out, it was so confusing for them in some ways that I would engineer every show. So the studio move was set up to begin Monday, August 24th. Monday, August 24th, we're going to shut down the studio, stop broadcasting. One of my hosts would actually stream some other radio content from the East Coast out into our network so that it would play and that we actually wouldn't be off the air in the true sense, but we wouldn't be running our regular schedule. So that was due to start Monday, August 24th. And on Saturday morning, August 22nd, my wife rolled over in bed, put her arms around me, and told me she loved me, that she would always love me, and she thanked me for letting me love her. And I was so grateful. I was so filled with, finally, she's opening, she's talking to me. And then she said, but she had to move out for spiritual advancement. I was stunned. I told her to take her arms off me. I got up, I went downstairs. I was angry, I was hurt. I didn't understand where this had come from. And when she came downstairs, I had calmed down. I told her clearly she needed to do this. I wanted to be supportive, which she agreed to talk of what was going on so I would better understand. She didn't have to do it today, but if we could just talk about it. But during August and September, I finished moving the studio from the suite of offices into my home. And at the same time, it was necessary to restore the suite of offices to the original condition. That move cost me over $6,000 for everything that I had to do. Actually, it was closer to 10, but that's a different story. A lot of money got sunk into that between the move, the technical support of my engineers, the contractor to restore the offices. And it was money, in hindsight, that I didn't have to spend if I knew what was going to happen. But I didn't. I kept leaving it to my wife to tell me when she was ready for that discussion to continue. There was no discussion. There was no changes. And then November began. We made it from August and September, into now November. And November began with my car being totaled. And then the plumbing flooded the downstairs of the house, ruining the floors and carpets. The floors were torn up, carpets removed, walls were cut open to allow drying. We had the big fans going for a week. And after the week, the day the team was coming in to repair the floors and walls and replace the carpet, I slipped coming down the stairs, twisted my ankle so badly it swelled to the size of a football. It was a bad, bad sprain, which would actually carry all the way through 2016 till now. Now, through November, my focus was really on the auto repairs. And finally, when the house was restored, that was so much better. So with my bad ankle, I was moving furniture, getting things out of the way, doing it all by myself. My wife was never there to help in any way, shape, or form, and I didn't have anyone else to call on. As I said, my focus was on my auto repairs and what was going on there, discussions with the insurance company, all types of issues like that. My wife and I didn't have any further discussions until the weekend after Thanksgiving, when she once again rolled over, hugged me, said she loved me, and it was time to go. A little while later that same day, the woman who sat to my right at Thanksgiving dinner called to see if my wife needed help moving. Now, I was in semi-shock, angry, confused, and uncertain. This woman knew, but she hadn't had a discussion with me. That afternoon, she was gone. And in order to financially survive, I needed to take in a roommate. I also needed to find work. Now, within a month, I had a roommate. Within 3 months, I had a job. So now I went from 2012, where it's the whole email thing of there's something wrong about my wife and I being married. We've got to have correspondence from everybody from my company and every government employee from her division go through a third party. Next, I lose my job. I'm put out to pasture in 2013. I do what I can to generate revenue and ended up spending a tremendous amount of my savings in 2014 trying to generate revenue under the fear that if I didn't generate some revenue, you know, my wife, that I was disappointing her somehow and that maybe she would leave me, because I felt that even at that time. And then 2015, she does leave me. After moving my studio, which she thought was a good idea, after moving it, by the way, which cost me a great deal of money. I wouldn't have moved it. I just would have shut it down at that time. And in 2016, I now have a roommate. This made 2016 a year of additional difficulty. My wife left all of her furniture, personal items. She moved in with this other woman who has a very large house. She took a lot of clothes and some personal items, but a lot of stuff is left here, still here. She didn't seem anxious to pack it up, so I piled it all into one room. And I began to get back on my feet financially. And the roommate and I developed this very uncomfortable dance around each other and found new ways to avoid each other. During all of this, I continued to explore how hurt, how angry, how confused, and how lonely I felt. I mean, when the roommate would come in, the truth is, it was nice to have the roommate, but she didn't like interacting with me. She developed her own resentments of me, which is certainly what I needed after living with the woman I truly loved who wouldn't communicate with me and finally left to be with someone else. My best company during 2016 was my cap, Merlin, who favored me over anyone else. That I appreciated. It didn't matter who came in, he preferred me. And slowly I started to get out of my darkness. I did have a good friend who was supportive, and my sister who lived in New York called most days, feeling compelled to be the big sister that I would never let her be before. The roommate finally moved out in September of 2016. That was good. It had gotten to a situation where we were two people deliberately avoiding each other, and that was not helpful and healing to me as I was still trying to heal from what my ex-wife had done. I didn't know about the relationship, but the leaving and all that accomplished. We still interacted because she also did a segment on my other radio show, Good Vibrations Radio. It's a show we used to do together, but it had shifted and changed, and she no longer did the show with me every week. So I settled into some peace of self, and 2016 kind of moved to 2017. And I was feeling more of a sense of self, especially after the roommate left. That tension was out of the house. And on January 1st, 2017, a friend took me north to pick up a new car I'd been able to purchase. Actually, it was a previously owned car, but it was new for me. When we returned home, a woman approached me in my driveway asking if I had a cat named Merlin. I said yes. And she said he'd been hit by a car and was hiding in a bush. And she took me to the spot, and poor Merlin lay there mewing softly. I picked him up. My friend drove me to the veterinary hospital. They x-rayed him and found that his spine had been broken. And while that could be fixed with surgery, his nerves had been severed, and he would never walk again. He wouldn't even be able to control his bowels. And all feeling and sensation below the brake was permanently gone. With tears, I held him as he was put to sleep. I kept doing my inner work. I continued my studies with the University of Metaphysical Sciences. I did the past lives work. I did the self-love work. I did the forgiveness work. I did the inner child work, to name some of the most impactful. And finally, I was feeling cleared. I was feeling that I'd really made progress, although more work was needed. There were many things about the relationship with my ex that I didn't understand, her moving out, her failure to communicate with me, or seemingly lack of desire to communicate with me. And I was also trying to clear some of the deep love I still felt for her. Periodically, I recognized that when resentment or issues would come up, it was really because I still loved her. I still loved her deeply. And I needed to resolve that to see if that love could be turned into a love that wasn't so compelling to me, that would allow me to not only forgive her and myself, but would allow me to love her in an appropriate way that wouldn't feel like such a loss for the absence of her love in my life. I was clearing much of that anger and much of the resentment and the sadness and the depression. I was feeling the best I had about it in years, and I felt settled with my feelings about what had occurred and my ex-wife, and I was doing that work. And it was at that moment that a well-meaning person who heads a spiritual group locally shared with me that the reason my ex left me was because she was seeing someone else. Now, after all the work I had done, I felt crushed. I didn't sleep for several nights, and finally in exhaustion, I fell asleep the third night. So kind of a recap here. 2012 was that whole email brouhaha, which made it look as if the marriage of my wife and I was inappropriate in the workplace, and it wasn't. Two, I was let go, 2013. Three, 2014, I was desperately trying to generate revenue and find work, so that I would seem to break through this barrier that was between my wife and I, which at the time I thought was her disappointment in me. 2015, I had expressed publicly that she was the most important thing in my life, even though I'd expressed it to her all the time, and she didn't reciprocate in any way, shape, or form. I moved the studio to home, a lot of work, a lot of expense, and all of a sudden, she tells me she's moving out. I honestly wouldn't have done that. Moving that studio forced me to have to stay in the place I was in. Then, she finally does move out. My car's been totaled. My ankle's been twisted. The house had been flooded and destroyed. And then she moves out. And that was how my 2015 ended, going into 2016. In 2016, I had the roommate from hell. Although there were some good characteristics of having the roommate and the revenue was wonderful, it just turned out to be a bad situation all the way around. And that was where I left it, when suddenly I'm getting clear. By 2017, my adorable cat Merlin, who was an outside guy, he was a wonderful guy, great personality, strong and lean, wonderful hunter, but my wonderful Merlin was hit by a car. And so all of that, I had reached to where I'd come to a place of being in a good place. I was working through my self-love, my exercises had been applying. And then the person tells me that the reason she left was because she was seeing someone else. I was crushed. And then my ex contacted me to talk about why she left. That wasn't that long ago. Since that time, there's been a peeling back of many layers of the onion between my ex and I, the deceptions, the overt and covert lies, the loss of affection that was given to another, so many layers. Her revelations to me led to many open discussions between us. Probably the most open discussions we've had in years and years and years, and certainly since the deception started, but in years. Now let's consider what I've already shared in previous shows. When things happen, when trauma, when disappointments, when injury, when illness, you have to take responsibility for what occurred. Now, when I say this, this is not her taking responsibility. She does have to do that for her. It's me taking responsibility for all that occurred over the last 6 years. This step creates power for you so that you are not the victim of the person or the events. The inability to heal is often the result of needing to hold that victim role. The second thing is that accept that in a spiritual perspective, nothing wrong was done to you. Nothing wrong happened to you. And this further reduces the power of the victim mentality. So in my case, I have to take responsibility. I have to recognize nothing wrong was done to me or happened to me. Next, I have to notice. You notice where you still feel in judgment. The area where the judgment appears is a wound, and that wound needs to be loved in order to heal. And you have to recognize that what was done cannot be undone. What can you learn? What can you use to move forward and not get stuck in the past? This is really the most challenging step, because this is the one that wants to pull us back, wants to say, you poor thing, look at what happened to you. It cannot be undone. We can't change that past. And the last step is to choose to feel the power of peace. Ho'oponopono helps in sending love, not only in the step where we notice where we feel judgment and we want to heal a wound, but also in the step about feeling peace. It's about allowing the peace of the divine to flow. And the four phrases in Ho'oponopono are, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you. I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you. Now, I say them in that order. You can say them in any order that works for you. I find that telling myself I love myself right up front is establishing the foundation for my trust, my support, my feeling support. Then saying I'm sorry and please forgive me in that order says I'm sorry for what happened and what I may have not prevented from happening or may have allowed to happen. Forgive me. I'm human. But I didn't do it to intentionally hurt myself. And then thank you for accepting the apology and receiving the love. Now, as I shared on the first forgiveness show on July 9th, all of our fears stem from our separation from Source. And since we're divine beings, this separation from Source manifests from our three primary fears: the fear of abandonment, the fear of not being enough, and the fear of trusting. Those fears scratch our inner wounds, and the inner wounds are identified as your wounded inner child. Now, forgiveness is one of the hardest yet most necessary aspects of your emotional, spiritual, and physical health. And in this last month, I've shared these topics. I've also been forced to confront my own wounded inner child. I was doing this work to share, but it turned out I was doing this work to clear. In his book, Homecoming, Reclaiming and Championing Your Inner Child, the late John Bradshaw offered a mnemonic to identify and describe the types of wounds that are stored within the inner child. The mnemonic is the word contaminate. So the C of contaminate is codependence. The O is for offender behavior. The N is for narcissistic disorders. The T is for trust issues. The A is for acting out, acting in behaviors. The M is for magical beliefs. The I is for intimacy dysfunctions. The N is for non-disciplined behaviors. The T is for thought distortions. The E is for emptiness, which leads to apathy or depression. Your inner wounds are stored and carried by your inner child. Your inner child is made up of memories of your own emotional thinking and behavior patterns from different stages of your life. Since many parents are so busy dealing with their own inner child issues, they may have not provided the loving, responsible foundation needed by their children. And as a child, you're not mature enough to protect yourself from feelings of abandonment, being unlovable, distrust of others, and many other elements that would feed into your underlying feelings of separation from Source. To become a fully functional adult, your inner child wounds have to be healed. Your inner child is made up of memories of your own emotional thinking and behavior patterns from different stages of your life. Last week, I examined each wound in detail, but here's a summary. One is codependence. To be codependent is to be out of touch with your own feelings, needs, and desires. So without a healthy inner life, the child and adult are exiled to seek fulfillment on the outside. This is codependence, and it's a symptom of a wounded inner child. And offender behaviors. Much of the violence and cruelty in the world is done by those with wounded inner children. An offender behavior is the major source of human destruction. It's the result of childhood violence and true suffering and unresolved grief of that abuse. The once powerless wounded child becomes an offender adult. Some offenders were not actually abused, but they were spoiled by their parents through overindulgence and oversubmission, so that they learned to feel that they were superior to others. So offenders don't take responsibility for their behaviors. Then there's narcissistic disorders. From birth, every child needs to be loved unconditionally and to know appropriate boundaries. Without the mirroring eyes of a non-judgmental parent or caretaker, a child has no way of knowing who he or she is. So if your healthy needs were not met growing up by your sense of self, your I am is damaged. John Bradshaw called this the narcissistically deprived inner child, leaving the adult with an insatiable craving for love, attention, and affection. And the need must be filled externally. No matter how much love has received, it's never enough. So in their drive to fill their need, they often become addicts. Sex or love or money or collecting or hoarding or degrees or whatever. It's always something external to take in that makes you feel better about yourself. Many actors and athletes also operate from this need. The insatiable craving for love, attention, and affection. Then there's trust issues. Now, when caretakers are untrustworthy, children develop a deep sense of distrust. The world becomes a dangerous, hostile, unpredictable place. The child must always be on guard and in control. A kind of control madness emerges. Control becomes an addiction. You can develop extremes in trusting as well. You can either trust in a gullible fashion, so you always feel taken advantage of, or you don't trust at all, and you can swing back and forth between the two. A person who can't trust or never learned to trust confuses intensity with intimacy, obsession with care, and control with security. Then we have acting out, acting in behaviors. The primary motivating force in your life is your emotions. Emotions are the fuel that moves you to defend yourself and get your basic needs met. When your emotions are frozen, and they're unresolved and unexpressed, the emotional energy continually tries to resolve itself. It can't express itself in healthy expression, so it becomes expressed in abnormal behavior. This is called the acting out. Acting out or reenacting is one of the most devastating ways in which the wounded inner child sabotages your life. You repeat what you attempt to avoid. You create what you're afraid of happening. When you act in, you punish yourself for your behavior, even when no one else is punishing your behavior. It's almost the opposite. Then there's magical beliefs. Magic is the belief that certain words, gestures, or behaviors can change reality. Children are magical in their thinking. A child wounded through unmet dependency needs does not really grow up. As an adult, he's still contaminated by the magical thinking of a child. Beliefs such as, if I have the money, I'll be okay. If my lover leaves me, I'll die. Or I'll never make it. Or a piece of paper degree will make me smart. If I try hard, the world will reward me. Waiting will bring about wonderful results. All magical thinking beliefs that there's always something that will magically solve it. Then there's intimacy dysfunctions, which Many adult children move back and forth between the fear of abandonment and the fear of engulfment. And some are permanently isolated because of their fear of being smothered by another person. Others refuse to leave destructive unions due to their terror of being alone. And most fluctuate between the two extremes. When a parent rejects a child's authentic self, a false self is set up. And in order to receive love, the wounded child behaves as he or she believes the parent expects them to behave. As the false self develops over the years gradually, the false self becomes who the person really believes they are. The false self is never your true self. It's an adaptation, an act. It's based on a script someone else wrote. It's impossible to be intimate if you have no sense of self. How can you share yourself with another if you don't know who you really are? How can anyone know you if you don't know who you really are? Then there's non-disciplined behaviors. And discipline comes from the Latin word disciplina, which means teaching. By disciplining children, you teach them how to live more productively and lovingly. As M. Scott Peck, the author of The Road Less Traveled, has said, discipline is a way to reduce life suffering. You learn that telling the truth, delaying gratification, being honest with ourselves, and being self-responsible can enhance life's joys and pleasures. Children learn from what their parents actually do, not from what they say they do. The undisciplined inner child dawdles, procrastinates, refuses to delay gratification, rebels, is self-willed and stubborn, and acts impulsively without thinking. The over-disciplined child is rigid, obsessive, overly controlled and obedient, and people-pleasing and ravished with shame and guilt. Then there's addictive compulsive behaviors, and the wounded inner child is the major cause of addictive behaviors. Addictive activities include work, shopping, gambling, sex, religious rituals. In fact, any activity can be used to alter feelings. Activities alter feelings through distraction. Cognitive addictions are a powerful way to avoid feelings. And at the core of most addictions is the wounded inner child, who is in constant state of craving and insatiable neediness. Then there's thought distortions, where children are absolutizers. This quality of a child's thinking is manifested by an all or nothing polarity. If you don't love me, you hate me. There's no in between. So children personalize everything. If the parent has no time for the child, it must mean the child is not okay, that something is wrong with the child. And then there's emptiness, which leads to apathy and depression. The wounded inner child also contaminates adult life with a low-grade chronic depression experienced as emptiness. Emptiness is also experienced as apathy. And this depression is the result of the child's having to adopt a false self, leaving the true self behind. Now, when a person loses his authentic self, he's lost contact with his true feelings, needs, and desires. What he experiences instead are the feelings required by the false self. To have a false self is to be in an act. Your true self is never present. Adult children are self-absorbed. Their emptiness is like a chronic toothache, and when one is in chronic pain, all one can think of is himself. Those are the categories of contamination that can be contained in your wounded inner child. And as you do, and as each of us goes to heal our wounded inner child and work on forgiveness, healing the wounded inner child is that intended outcome. It's not a one-time event. It's an ongoing process that requires your attention every day. Last week I shared a wounded child meditation that you may want to go back to, and perhaps next week I'll I'll repeat it so that we have time to get it in and think through it. But this past 6 years for me has been one continuous journey of pain and healing. And I'm still in pain, and I'm still going through the healing. But I started metaphysical musings under the guise of trying to open up to my own healing as well as share the process with the rest of you. As I close, I want to thank you once again for listening to Metaphysical Musings on Spirit Talk. And additional shows concerning metaphysical topics can be found at goodvibrationsradio.com. If you have any questions or missed any elements in the show, please go to solazar.com and send me an email. Let me know what you're interested in or working on. But as you work on forgiveness and inner child healing, remember the anonymous poem from Empower Astrology. In the midst of hate, I found there was within me an invincible love. In the midst of tears, I found there was within me an invincible smile. In the midst of chaos, I found there was within me an invincible calm. And I realized through it all that in the midst of winter, I found there was within me an invincible summer. No matter how hard the world pushes against me, within me, there's something stronger, something better, pushing right back. Whatever you give, do so from your heart. I want to repeat that. In the midst of hate, I found there was within me an invincible love. In the midst of tears, I found there was within me an invincible smile. In the midst of chaos, I found there was within me an invincible calm. I realized through it all that in the midst of winter, I found there was within me an invincible summer. No matter how hard the world pushes against me, within me, there's something stronger, something better, pushing right back. Whatever you give, do so from your heart. As I spoke earlier, remember, do your daily practice of gratitude. Thank you for everything. I have no complaints whatsoever. Practice your self-love by doing your Ho'oponopono practice, saying, I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. Alan Watson shared, when you forgive, you recognize that you have not lost your peace or love because of what happened. You lost it because you chose to lose it. You decided at some point to let go of the peace of the divine in your heart. The event came along to justify your loss of peace. You projected the loss of peace into the event and said, that's why I'm upset. You're not the victim. You have a choice. It's the choice that I remind myself every day that I'm not a victim. I have a choice. The last 6 years have been transformative. They have peeled back layers, and everything that I had relied upon could no longer be depended upon. And that's when we come to the moment of truth within ourselves. Have you looked within to really say, who are you, and who are you presenting to the world? And then, is that really you? And is that the you you want to be? Once again, let's do the forgiveness prayer shared by Lisa Barnett in her book, Infinite Wisdom of the Akashic Records. Now, there are three levels to this prayer. I'll speak slowly. You repeat the phrases out loud after me. The three levels of the prayer are, first, we'll send forgiveness for those who have hurt us. Then we're going to send forgiveness to ourselves for those we've hurt. And then we're going to send forgiveness to ourselves for any hurt we've done to ourselves. Breathe in and out. In. Out. Be ready. Be calm. Be non-distracted. Divine Spirit Source. Please bring me forgiveness to anyone or anything that has hurt me. From the beginning of time until the end of time. Whether they realize they hurt me or not. I now forgive them and I release them of any obligation they've had with me. Divine Spirit Source. Please be my forgiveness for myself. For any hurt that I have caused others. From the beginning of time until the end of time. Whether I realized I hurt them or not. I now forgive myself. And I release myself of any obligation I have had with them. Divine Spirit Source. Please be my forgiveness. For myself. For any hurt that I have caused myself. From the beginning of time until the end of time. Whether I realized I hurt myself or not. I now forgive myself. And I release myself of any negative obligation I had with myself. I invoke the power of grace and forgiveness. To transform my body, mind, and heart. As I return to my divine innocence. And so it is. Forgiveness clears karma. It allows you to heal your past, which consists of anything prior to this moment. It includes your childhood wounds, your past lives. Done at the end of the day, it helps to clear all the negativity that builds within you. Work with this prayer for 33 consecutive days every day. It heals chasms of pain and separation in relationships with self, other people, or situations in your life. go ahead and look up Lisa Barnett, LisaBarnett, Infinite Wisdom of the Akashic Records. Visit her and become familiar with that healing prayer. So I want to thank you once again for listening to Metaphysical Musings. If you have any questions or if there are topics you'd like me to cover, send an email to solazar@gmail.com. That's solazar@gmail.com. Remember, the healing journey is a continuous journey. We're really never off that wheel. We just keep healing different layers as we peel back other layers. Many blessings to you in your journey of life. Thank you for listening. Namaste.
There is no life I know to compare with pure imagination. Living there, you'll be free if you truly wish to be. For somebody else, if I'm not right for me.